All right, everybody, back to work. The holidays are over. Is it back to work today?
I thought today was kind of a holiday.
It's an observed day.
Holiday-esque thing.
I can't tell, but we're back to work. I'm Mike Parsons. He's Dave Rieger. There's Rich Luzinski. We're from whatever, Dave. Don't worry. Kevin and Tom will be back tomorrow. They're starting the new year off with a day off. And how's everyone feeling? I feel like everyone got the ick over the Christmas break. I got the Lindsay Lohan Mean Girls era thing going on. So as the show goes on, I'm going to sound sultry and sultrier.
I'm digging it.
Yeah, you sound great, Rich. Dave.
Well, that's nice.
Oh, thanks. I'm trying. You could probably hear it in my voice.
No, we can't. You know
you
why?
You look emaciated.
Thank you very much.
Because the listeners don't know what our normal voices sound like.
There you go.
Yeah. That's true.
So, feel free to chime in anytime, 800-859-0957, whether on text or phone calls. And I believe they start every Monday off with a little thing called the headlines, Rich, or as Jay Leno would say.
Yes, checking with the headlines.
And since Rich has the most newsman voice, why don't you kick us off?
Major flight delays all over the country over the past 2 weeks. Those flying United, Delta, and American Airlines had their fair share of cancellations and logistical nightmares, but it was customers of Southwest Airlines that took the brunt of the beating. We'll have more on that with WJR's senior news analyst Marie Osborne at 9:35.
You know, I get a lot of guff for flying Spirit Airlines, you know, because it's what's in within my price range. And sure, when you fly Spirit Airlines, you kind of feel like you're in a school bus and you're taking your life in your own hands. But my bags have always showed up exactly where they're supposed to be.
Splendid.
Yeah. So, God, what a mess. And yeah, we've got a lot more to say about this with Marie at 9:35.
Yeah. And how about, unfortunately, Michigan losing in the college football playoff to TCU and NFL teams, including one Denver Broncos, already calling on Jim Harbaugh to come back to the NFL.
Yeah. Well, Dave,
I didn't know he left.
Yeah. And here's the thing. I wasn't planning on talking Denver Broncos football with Dave today. For those that know Dave, he is the only person in Michigan who is a Denver Broncos fan. Dave, do you want Jim Harbaugh to be the coach of your NFL football team?
If it can make the team better, yes, come. He's the quarterback whisperer, Andrew Luck, Colin Kaepernick. Can we just add Russell Wilson to that group of people, please? Yeah, come on, why not? You've done very well at Michigan, back-to-back college football playoffs. It was a game of some people might say officiating, other people might say turnovers, but yeah, I mean, I would hate to people who are U of M fans to lose Harbaugh because he seems to have obviously gained a lot of traction after the COVID year and his start with Michigan, but we'll see what happens. He said that he's staying, so I don't know.
It's got to be exhausting to be a Michigan fan to do this every year, and we'll actually be talking about this among many other football stories with Steve Courtney at 10:05. Well, three New York City police officers were injured in a machete attack near Times Square on New Year's Eve. The suspect is a 19-year-old man His name is Trevor Bickford. He was known to authorities because family members reported him over concerns of him being radicalized by Islam on the internet, and he was actually planning on traveling to Afghanistan to join in the jihad.
Whoa.
And that's my biggest fear when it comes to these events and like these big these big crowds. I mean, the one thing I do is when I'm in a big crowd like this, and you're just packed in, and New Year's Eve in Times Square just looks miserable to begin with.
It's cold.
Right. What if you have to go to the bathroom?
Oh, some people wear diapers.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Not me.
No. You're a man who lives on the edge.
That's right.
You're just going to let nature take its course.
Have you ever been to Times Square for a New Year's Eve party?
No, and I never will go.
My brother has.
Wait, he's been to New Year's Eve or he's worn a diaper?
He might have done both. I don't know. But I know he's been to New Year's Eve at Times Square. He said it was an incredible time. And I think that was back maybe 2000. He was there for the millennium.
Oh, wow. Well, that I could kind of see. It's right. A special time.
Right, and they probably were expect because they were expecting everything to go dark on the millennium. Right. You probably wanted to be there for that. But
who doesn't remember Y2K?
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, when I'm in these, and maybe it's just conditioning with kind of the world we live in, but when I'm in one of these crowded places, I'm always looking for the escape route. Because you never know.
Yeah.
You never know. I mean.
That's wise.
Yeah. I mean, there's the a bunch of shootings at concerts. There was that big Vegas festival that one year. Yeah. Movie theaters. And when you're in one of these big venues with a lot of people, it's something you got to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm. The food you take for granted at the grocery store now may become a hot commodity in the new year. The global pandemic and Russia's war with Ukraine will continue to impact both the price of what we see on store shelves and the availability of those products. We'll let you know more about that and the expected food that may or may not be on your shelf.
You know, this all started with the toilet paper during the pandemic, but and then it was exacerbated by, remember, the Ever Given, this giant barge was stuck in the Suez Canal and nothing to get through.
Oh, I forgot about that.
I feel like even though we're quote-unquote out of the pandemic, I feel like the supply chain just gotten worse and worse. I mean, things that you just, you know, before 2020, you just run out to the store, 5 minutes in and out, you can get it. Now you might have to go to two or three places, and you might not be able to find it. You might just have to order it on Amazon.
They did get that barge out, right?
They did, okay. And we got the toilet paper situation figured
out. Under control.
But, it's very concerning just how delicate our supply chain is.
You ain't kidding.
Yeah, you know, I got to tell you, it's I'm seeing it already at grocery stores too. You know, I'm seeing it already.
Dave, next headline.
Where we're talking about the Gordie Howe Bridge, also.
Oh yes,
and how
another
that might,
supply chain
yeah,
issue
and how that
here.
Might get delayed until 2025.
Wow.
Canadian officials are saying that it was supposed to be opened by the end of 2024, but because of COVID. They're saying that it might not get finished until 2025.
Gordy, how can that be?
And that would give us, a just another, you know, place to go to get stuff from Canada.
Right.
So.
Yeah. I mean, crossing the border, both places are nightmares. And 28-year-old Brian Koberger was arrested in Pennsylvania's Pocono Mountains Friday for that murder of the four University of Idaho students. He's a criminal justice grad student at nearby Washington State University, which is a bit unsettling. It's almost like he used his degree to carry out this heinous crime. He waived his extradition hearing, and it turns out he was actually allegedly tracking these victims' cell phones for the murder. I'm glad they found someone because it seemed like this was going to be one of those things that went unsolved, and it was very unsettling. And if I were one of those students at the University of Idaho, I probably wouldn't have come back until they found the guy. It is 9:14 on News Talk 760 WJR. Mike, Rich, and Dave filling in, coming back. Some interesting campaign finance news from the Whatever Dave podcast on thegreatvoice.com. 800-859-0957 if you want to call or text us about anything we're talking about today on All Talk with Tom Jordan and Kevin Dietz. The fellows will be back tomorrow. I thought today was a work day. It's one of those half work days, half holidays.
It's a good thing somebody showed up today.
Yeah,
there'd be no show.
I was just up here because I forgot my cell phone. So Governor Whitmer did her inauguration yesterday on New Year's Eve on a Sunday. That seemed weird to me. I don't know. Kind of like, all right, let's get this thing over with. I got 15 minutes. Call everyone to the Capitol and let's get this done.
Kind of obligatory.
Yeah. But also I said to myself, I haven't really paid attention to other gubernatorial inaugurations. But I swear.
I've been meaning to get on you about that.
Yeah. Well, too little too late. I do remember her first inauguration. I feel like we were at work, but I could be wrong.
I do remember that night. Yeah,
yeah.
I think we were at work. I think we were pulling cuts, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe your second inauguration's like your second wedding. It's not as big of a deal as the first one.
So well, and it was a new incoming governor.
Right. Yes. So maybe she didn't have control over the first one, but she has control over this one. Mm. Oh, well, I like it. Get down to business. Let's knock this thing out in a half hour on Sunday. Sure. Be ready to come back to work on Monday. But she got there in no small part to her outspending and out fundraising former candidate Tudor Dixon. And let's see, the Free Press, wanted to make sure I shouted out the right newspaper. The Free Press actually did a breakdown on Governor Whitmer's digital advertising versus what she did back in 2018 and versus what Tudor Dixon did. And so she spent about $4 million, Governor Whitmer did, during this last 2022 election, as opposed to $724,000 digitally. $1.5 million of that went to Facebook ads. She only spent $128,000 in 2018. $1.3 million went to YouTube ads for Governor Whitmer. And she spent $846,000 advertising on Hulu and Roku. Dixon, they didn't break down where all Dixon money went, but Governor Whitmer, she spent $4 million advertising digitally. And Tudor Dixon only spent $182,000 in online ads.
Wow.
Most of those went to Facebook and Google ads. But, I mean, I think a large part of that was that up until the end where the Republican Party saw that Tudor Dixon was in striking distance, she got absolutely no financial help until, like, the final stretch mm-hmm. where, I mean, there's all these stories about how Governor Whitmer's war chest was multiple times bigger than Tudor Dixon's. So, and then when it looked close, then the GOP started dumping some money in Tudor Dixon. But it's probably too little too late at that point.
Yeah.
Did anybody really think that Tudor Dixon had a chance, no matter how much money Governor Whitmer spent or did not spend?
Well, I don't know, because if you remember before that election, we were supposed to see this big red wave.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's even us working here in the news media, it's hard for us to kind of get a sense of how the election's going. I think we all thought that there'd be a red wave, and it turned out that with a bunch of unforeseen circumstances, which we'll talk about later on, mainly Roe versus Wade, that it really mobilized the Democrat base and people to come out and vote blue. But I got to be honest, there was a time close to the election I thought Tudor Dixon had a shot. She went from having no shot in the primary to she might win this primary, to she did win the primary, to she's mm-hmm. got no shot in the general, to she's within striking distance. But again, she did not get any financial help till way, way too late.
Did you know that Tudor Dixon spent almost $500,000 on text messages?
Yes. And I have those numbers right here. She spent,
it was like $400,000 something.
$473,000.
I equate those to the old robocalls that you would get during election time.
Right.
And I think a lot of people find those intrusive and annoying.
Right. I was going to say that could be a reason she blew it, because Whitmer only spent $250,000.
Right.
And to me, the most annoying of all political ads are the text messages.
Yeah.
Right. That's what I was just going to ask. So are you more annoyed by YouTube solicitations? Are you more annoyed when you're scrolling through your newsfeed on Facebook and you start to get political stuff, or text messages that come in at all hours of the day and night about make sure you get out and vote. Make sure that this is the, you know, this is the Michigan Republicans for whatever. You know,
right.
Make sure that you get out and vote.
Text messages, 1,000%.
Absolutely. With YouTube, it comes with the territory. You know,
we're
you're going to see
it.
An advertisement.
It's almost like background noise at this point.
Yeah, right.
And when I read this, I was actually surprised, because anecdotally at least, and I didn't do any research, but I felt like I saw a lot more Tudor Dixon ads on YouTube than maybe it was my algorithm. I don't know what it was about my YouTube viewing habits that made me see a disproportionate amount of Tudor Dixon ads as opposed to Whitmer, especially with how much money we saw Whitmer put into the platform. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the text messaging, I mean, if I'm a political consultant, I say just forget about that. Like, literally nobody yeah. likes getting those. You might as well just send me a spam email.
Right.
It might be just because I work here at the station, but I kind of felt like I just heard Tudor Dixon everywhere doing a lot of interviews, a lot of television commercials, a lot of radio interviews, more than Governor Whitmer. Mm. But it seems that obviously that Governor Whitmer took the, okay, I'm going to go and, you know, go strong with, you know, social media.
Yeah. Right.
Youth.
Well, and Laura actually noticed something that I didn't, and they didn't mention how much money Whitmer spent on this platform. But Laura, you said that you saw a lot of Governor Whitmer on TikTok.
Her presence seemed to be huge compared to Tudor Dixon's. And I mean, it you know, the Democratic Party is going towards the younger base, and they're on TikTok more than the older demographic. So
right.
It makes sense. They're going to spend more money and more time and energy focusing on that to pull in new voters, which seem to have worked, versus if you're sticking with the traditional, and some of them are not, you know, when it comes to ads on TV and like what Rich was saying with YouTube, it's, you're used to seeing it on your TV. So now when it's on YouTube, because YouTube's becoming more like your TV and you're streaming stuff and there's YouTube TV, it doesn't really seem to Matt, you know, it's nothing new, and you're not thinking anything about it.
Right, where text message spam is kind of new. I see, especially because they're spoofing local numbers now.
But I mean, not necessarily. It's just even when it comes to like, you're able to get to almost everyone with text messages.
Right,
it doesn't matter really the age; you can get to all ages when it comes to just sending a text.
Yeah, and one big thing that became popular on social media around the election was people screenshotting themselves cussing out the text bots. That's not the right thing to do either, especially because I'm always afraid there's like an actual human being just you know, working for $10 an hour trying to break into the business.
But why don't you guys just send an end or stop?
Yeah, that's true. Right. Right. People spend so much emotional energy and so many keystrokes telling off a robot that probably isn't going to read it anyway. And stop or end. I don't know. Maybe it makes people feel better. I'm not sure. But look, if I were the traditional media, I would take notice here. I mean, $4 million isn't a lot in the grand scheme of things when it comes to advertising dollars, but it's a lot more than even the last election. If we keep going on this pace, you're going to start seeing a lot more money going to these new digital platforms and not as many going to traditional media like TV stations, radio stations, newspapers, and billboards. So,
well, they're obviously trying to get, and as Laura pointed out, they're obviously trying to get to the young people because that's the future of each party. And they're trying to lock them in early. So it makes sense that they're doing it this way with the social media push.
800-859-0957. Coming up, senior news analyst Marie Osborne helps us make sense of the holiday travel mess. Mike Parsons, Dave Rieger, Rich Luzinski from the Whatever Dave podcast here. If you found yourself in the holiday travel mess, give us a call, 800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR. What's your story? What did you have to end up doing? But right now we have WJR senior news analyst Marie Osborne. Christmas holiday is nothing short of catastrophic for customers, that whole Southwest Airlines mess. Thousands of people are still waiting to get their luggage. Marie, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. So more than 15,000 of Southwest flights were canceled starting December 22nd. That included more than 2,300 canceled just this past Thursday. But that was a week after that big storm had already passed. Every airline had faced bad weather cancellations that week of Christmas, but only Southwest fell apart. So why did that happen? Well, first of all, we should say Southwest says its operations have returned to normal today. Actually, they were saying that over the weekend. Now, many airlines use something called a hub and spoke system, routing flights through some big airports to cut costs. Southwest has long prided itself using a point-to-point system. It's a leaner system, day-to-day, but it also means a lot of complex scheduling challenges to get the planes, the pilots, and the flight crews in the right place at the right time to take off. So when a massive storm hit, you can see why. It just threw that system into utter chaos. Experts say, though, that Southwest was also using badly outdated computer systems to manage that complicated system, and that seems to be the crux of the problem. And by the way, guys, just a little sidebar on that. They are not the only company in this country that is using highly antiquated computer systems and trying to get along on a wing and a prayer. These people got caught in a big way, though, as you can obviously see. The Department of Transportation says it's launching its own investigation into what went wrong here. A couple of things to remember about Southwest. This is not a bargain basement airlines where people don't expect a heck of a lot. It was a well-respected airline. A lot of people love flying Southwest. Some pilots, though, have warned that something like this was going to happen for a while. They could see the writing on the wall. Nobody listened, they said. Southwest is required by law to offer a full refund for canceled flight. It's also previously committed for any avoidable cancellation or extreme delay to rebook passengers at no additional cost and offer vouchers for meals and hotel accommodations. They've also said over the weekend they're going to go beyond that. Reasonable requests for reimbursements for meals, hotel, and alternate transportation. So in other words, if you had to use your rental car or tickets on other airlines or on a train, then you would be reimbursed. But that process is still underway. So this story is not over just yet. Oh, and then there's still the lost luggage, of course. There are still thousands of pieces of it laying all over the place, including some at Detroit Metro Airport and other big airports.
Yeah, and it's very disconcerting anytime you're dealing with a business that sends, you know, multi-ton machines through the air to hear that they're using outdated technology. Yeah, I mean, even if it's for their phone system. All right, Marie, we'll talk to you a little bit later on in the show. Thanks for joining us. 800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR. If you found yourself or a loved one tangled up in this holiday travel mess, we'd like to hear from you. One thing I will never do after this story, I will never check my bags. If I can't fit it in a carry-on, I'm not taking it. Because honestly, I think it's probably more stressful to get on your flight and not get your bags than you just have the flight canceled and you be at home.
Can you imagine those poor folks who had medication in there? You know, packed it away and didn't think anything of it.
Nobody should be checking medication. If you're going flying, you always are carrying on anything that's important. You're not checking, you know, anything that is, you know, that you need that's very important.
That's an important safety tip for
now,
David.
Now you tell us, Dave. You know, should have told us this before the holidays.
You know, I thoroughly enjoy flying, or I guess I used to enjoy flying. If I'm going to go on a trip and I have like a week and I'm going to go somewhere, I'm going to travel across the country, all right, you know, I'm going to fly because I want to get to my destination and I want to start my vacation. I used to hate like, hey, let's all hop in the car and take a road trip. Takes like 3 days to get to your place. You get to spend a day and a half, and then you're driving back. Oh, it's so beautiful. You can see the countryside, and it's such a wonderful drive. And I'm always like, you know,
look, I just want to there's
get,
a horse.
I need to get to where I need to get to.
Yeah.
All right. And get my vacation going.
Yeah. Dave is the most impatient member of this show. But honestly, This thing dragged on for a week. I mean, it wasn't until actually Friday where things were quote unquote back to normal. And, you know, they didn't have the pandemic to blame it on. You know, it sounded like on top of that antiquated phone system, they were making their scheduling too tight. And it just kind of all sort of unraveled. And I think a lot of people, if they knew what a mess this whole thing was going to be. B, they probably would have driven that 12 hours because yeah. they probably would have gotten there sooner, and they probably would have had their bags. Laura, you knew somebody, a member of your family or a friend who got caught up in this mess, didn't you?
Yeah, my cousin, she was supposed to fly out of Grand Rapids, I believe it was last Tuesday, to go back to L.A. where she lives. And she got to the airport, and it was not Southwest. It was either American or Delta she was flying. And she got to the desk, and they said, well, your flight's been canceled. We've got you leaving on Thursday out of Indianapolis.
When was she supposed to fly out originally?
She was supposed to fly out on Tuesday out of Grand Rapids.
Oh, my gosh.
So I don't really know. The part that I get it, and I understand that there's a lot going on, but Indianapolis is a distance.
Yeah.
So how do you just decide that? And I understand you could be sitting at the airport for times, but I mean, I hope she's getting compensated
yeah.
for that.
And I mean, God, what a disappointment. I mean, we're coming out of COVID, I guess. You know, 2020, Christmas was essentially canceled. 2021, it made a rebound. So there had to have just been tons of people out there looking forward to finally a quote-unquote normal Christmas. Mm-hmm. They probably put off their travel for those 2 years. And, I mean, you lose that time off because it's not like you can just call your boss and say, hey, boss, I'm going to be back on the 7th because my flight was delayed for a week.
Right.
And
people were getting error messages when they were trying to rebook. It was awful.
Yeah.
And they were it would continuously appear on their screens.
Right. And like your flight being canceled at your home airport's like the third worst case scenario. Second worst case scenario is you're stranded in another city. First worst case scenario is like I said, is your bags being mishandled and mislocated. But, you know, as Mr. Rogers says, anytime something bad happens, look for the helpers, right?
That's right.
There was actually a woman known as the Luggage Angel.
What?
At the Tampa Bay Airport.
I must know more, Michael.
Well, hold on to your seats because I'm about to tell you. She found, you know, because it seems like they were just putting these lost bags just kind of in a little roped off area, just on the floor in front of God and everybody. So she went away. She went around to all the tags, and she found the cell phone numbers
wow.
on the tags, and she would text people. Hey, I don't think she called herself the Luggage Angel, but I hope she did. And I hope she registered that domain and that Twitter handle.
Yeah.
She says, hey, this is so-and-so at the Tampa airport. If you're looking for your bags, here they are.
Wow.
And that's another lesson that that people are saying, make sure you put your cell phone on your luggage tags.
Yes.
800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR. If you found yourself stuck in this mess, we'll be right back. Well, bittersweet football weekend for football fans in the state. Michigan's dream season part two is over, and the Lions are still alive. And, of course, more rumors swirling around Jim Harbaugh. Sports analyst Steve Courtney here to give us all the gory details. Steve, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Michael. What a pleasure it is to be a part of whatever this is. Yeah, it was.
Thanks for being associated with us, Steve. It's mighty generous of you.
I wouldn't have it any other way. Yeah, a little disappointment as far as Wolverine Nation goes. I mean, you go to the Fiesta Bowl and obviously, Michigan was having a hell of a year. And, you know, that being said, they come across a Horned Frog team from TCU that clearly was not as scared with the subject matter at hand here. And, you know, I think it goes to the very first series. Donovan Edwards bust the first play from scrimmage for Michigan big. Next thing you know, they are knocking on the door. And instead of sticking with power football, that was the trademark of the Michigan running game this year, they try a little trickeration, and it exploded in their face. And I think, looking back, that's exactly what TCU was looking for. Then there was the pick six, and the Horned Frogs up 14-0. As a matter of fact, this TCU team, which wasn't even ranked until the fourth or fifth week of this college football season, never trailed. And, you know, we can sit here and, you know, dissect what went right, what went wrong for Michigan. They clearly fought till the end. But when all is said and done, you just couldn't overcome the amount of mistakes that the Wolverines made. Two interceptions returned for a touchdown. There was the fumble at the TCU 1 yard line. And I will say this as it relates to that. Yeah, that was a touchdown.
Absolutely.
I don't understand still 2 days after the fact, you know, how that was overturned. But that being said, the fumble from Mullins, just you can't have it.
Right. And, I mean, whether it was a bad call or not, I mean, still should have been a gimme, first and 10 from the 1 yard line.
Well, and here's the deal. You're talking about a Michigan team that had not given up more than 27 points in a game all season. And, you know, this Max Duggan, you know, he wasn't really all that effective throwing the ball. I've got the numbers here. 14 of 29 for 225 yards, although he did have 57 yards on the ground. So, look, you give credit to TCU. They are going to face off with Georgia for the national championship, just like everybody drew up last September, right?
That's right. Yeah,
Steve, wasn't TCU like 200 to 1 to win the national title at the start of the year, I think I read?
Yeah, it was something crazy obscene like that,
but,
David.
I think that, you know, we knew Michigan had this problem all year long. Red zone for Michigan was a problem. They'd get down to the red zone. They tried to power it in. They couldn't get it in the touchdown, and they settled for field goals. Did we not think that that might finally catch up with them? I would agree with you. The two pick sixes hurt, but I do give them credit, you know, for coming back. I thought tackling was a problem for the Michigan defense. And, you know, it's just I think it's Big Ten football going up against Big 12 football. And I don't know if they didn't expect it. I don't know if they just got caught off guard. But it just seemed like, you know, the defense they were playing, the guy would miss one tackle and then he was gone to off to the races.
Well, and now Michigan is going to deal with what they will deal with for a while. And that is the status of head coach Jim Harbaugh. And the honest to goodness truth is this. I think if Harbaugh had it his way, he would have been the head coach of the Minnesota Vikings this season. Because that was all going down. And I've talked to a couple of sources that I think Jim Harbaugh thought that he had that job with the Purple People League.
Sure seemed like it when he went in for his interview and then.
Well, so he comes back and has a hell of a season, and it ends in disappointing fashion. Now, according to reports, the Denver Broncos, who are looking for a head coach, have indeed reached out to Jim Harbaugh. And this is kind of reminds me of the end days for Nick Saban in East Lansing, because this is what Spartan Nation had to deal with.
Still devastating.
At the end of every season.
That, right.
You know, he was going to go here. He was going to go there. He's been offered this. He's got NFL aspirations and whatnot. So it is going to be a distraction. But let's get back to the National Football League quickly here, fellas, because our Lions are playing some ball, and you got to feel very excited for Lions Nation, because obviously we've been punched in the gut time and time again over the last several years. 41-10, they take care of the Bears yesterday. Didn't get off to a very good start at all, because you had Justin Fields running for 105 yards in the first quarter, and you're thinking, oh boy, here we go. As a matter of fact, at the end of the first quarter, the Lions trailing 10-7, and then this incredible offense got to work. And you had Jared Goff throwing two of his three touchdown passes to Brock Wright in the first half. Jamal Williams, a career-high 144 yards rushing on 22 carries. DeAndre Swift added 117 yards from scrimmage and two scores. So now what has to happen for the Detroit Lions to join the 1970 Cincinnati Bengals as the only teams in National Football League history to make it to the postseason after a 1-6 start? We know the Lions will finish the regular season at Lambeau Field against the Green Bay Packers, who, by the way, at one point were a 4-8 football team. Now, all of a sudden, they are in the postseason mix after their 41-17 win over the aforementioned Minnesota Vikings. It is winning in for Aaron Rodgers and the Pack. If they beat Detroit come Sunday, they are in regardless of what Seattle does. Now, as it applies to the Lions need to beat Green Bay, obviously, and they need the Rams to knock off the Seahawks. So Lions fans will be a bit conflicted. Right now, the Rams are 5-11, and you would like to see them lose, because if the Rams do, that draft pick that we get in the Matthew Stafford trade could be as high as number 4. But, again, you do need the Rams to win and the Lions to knock off the Packers. The Washington Commanders, by the way, they have been eliminated via the 24-10 loss to the Cleveland Browns. So the time for that Packers tilt has yet to be set. That will be done a little bit later on tonight. So are they going to flex it to prime time?
We'll see. Yeah, and if they do flex it to prime time and the Rams-Seahawks game is in the afternoon, essentially it'll be, and, you know, if the game goes our way, essentially it could be a playoff game at Lambeau, because if the Seahawks go down, like you said, Steve, it's down to us and the Pack at Lambeau. Hopefully it's flexed to prime time. So exciting time to be a Lions fan for sure. That's WJR sports analyst Steve Courtney, and we got some calls, we got some texts, we got our thoughts on both the games. Still a lot to get to here. 800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR. It's all talk. 800-859-0957 if you want to talk about the thrill of victory with the Lions or the agony of defeat with the Michigan Wolverines. And here we go again with Jim Harbaugh. And Dave, I'm going to let you out of your cage here, because once upon a time, we banned you from talking about anything Denver Broncos on this radio station. but it's pertinent. It's pertinent to the conversation here. And we addressed this a little bit during our headlines segment. But as the only Denver Broncos fan I know, what do you hope happens with Jim Harbaugh being reached out to by the Denver Broncos for their head coaching position?
You know what? Come to Denver. I'm sorry, Michigan fans, if it upsets you, but Denver needs the help more than the University of Michigan does. If the quarterback whisperer of the days of Andrew Luck, the days of Colin Kaepernick, can help out Russell Wilson, then come back to Denver. You know, and I don't know. He did say that he's planning on coming back to Michigan, but as Steve Courtney alluded to in his report, he felt that Harbaugh probably wanted to be the coach of the Minnesota Vikings.
Right.
So,
and Harbaugh has said in the past that he has some unfinished business in the NFL. Now, I don't know if that was before or after he said he was coming back to Michigan, but, you know, he also was vague when asked about it. Nobody knows the future. And I think that's exactly why the Broncos are looking at Jim Harbaugh, because they spent all that money on Russell Wilson and they need somebody who's offensive minded and understands the quarterback position.
Not to mention the fact that Jim Harbaugh, if you remember, was one play away from winning the Super Bowl against his brother.
Right.
In the Super Bowl where the power went out, if you remember.
What do you think that conversation's like at Thanksgiving? Like, do you think John Harbaugh cuts in front of Jim for the mashed potatoes and say, Super Bowl winners first?
Probably Jack has to, like, separate them, you know? It's like, you know, here's your Super Bowl winning brother, and then there's your Super Bowl losing brother. So,
and of course, Lions fans are going to be watching two games this upcoming weekend, obviously, Detroit versus Green Bay at the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field, which, depending on what time it's played, it could be essentially a playoff game if the Seahawks lose. But obviously, Lions fans are going to be embracing the Detroit Rams now more than ever, because, as Steve said, if the Rams win, the Lions would be in the playoffs if they were to beat Green Bay. And if they lose, we lose a little bit of draft capital. But I think this week, Lions fans will overlook that, and the whole draft pick thing will just be like a consolation prize to sort of heal our wounds if we end up missing the playoffs.
Yeah, I got to believe that they're going to flex the Lions game maybe to Saturday night.
It's got to be flexed to prime time. It's a playoff game.
And then, because, and then probably the Seattle game probably does could be I could see that being flexed to Sunday night, because that because if let's say that you know the
weird
Lions
flex, but
win,
okay,
you know the Lions if the Lions win, and Seattle beats the Rams, then it you know didn't mean anything. So you would have to do it that way instead of the opposite way.
I love me some Geno Smith in prime time,
and that game's in Seattle, and we'll see if Baker Mayfield has enough stuff left in his tank to try to get him a contract or a new team next year. And because you saw what the Rams did to the Broncos on Christmas Day. So
800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR. Dave's calling in from Dearborn Heights. What's up, Dave?
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
How you doing?
Great. Happy New Year.
Same to you. Hey, you know what I compare these Lions to this year? I compare them to the Red Wings of the mid to late 90s. You know, you can feel them just getting over the hump of being a good team finally. Mm. You know, from being a terrible team to a good team. Look what the Red Wings did from 97 on.
Yeah, I hope so, because the Red Wings, the hockey town Red Wings, was a moment.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was a shared moment amongst all of us here in Detroit. I mean, people who never watched hockey knew all the guys. You know, they knew Steve Yzerman as much as they knew Joey Koser. And, you know, they're not there yet, Dave, but I will say that the excitement level is somewhere where I haven't seen with these Detroit Lions in a long time.
Yeah, it's starting to feel the same as the Red Wings of the mid-90s.
Yeah. At the beginning of the turnaround. There. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And hello?
Well, you're still with us, Dave. Oh
okay, sorry.
Go ahead.
Anyway, can I give a shout-out to a buddy of mine who had surgery? Hope he's doing well.
Sure.
Yeah, Mr. Positive, he had some surgery about 4 weeks ago, and, you know, hopefully he's doing well getting over his surgery.
Dave, did you and Greg plan this?
No.
Because on the line now, thanks for the call, Dave, we have Greg from Shelby Township calling it a bit about something else. But, Greg, you're on All Talk with Mike, Rich, and Dave filling in. Hey, Greg.
Hey, you dynamic triple duo. Thank you, Dave from Dearborn. Hey, real quick, LaDuff is the one that got Tudor where she was in law.
Right, no exceptions.
You know,
yep, no exceptions in abortions.
Oh, my
yep.
God, my Charlie. Real quick, Jim Harbaugh can't win the bowls. He lost the last six. Kingpin Rieger might know that history about Harbaugh. And you guys, like I've said, he puts his hands on his knees. He looks up, and you look at him, and you think, does he know what he's doing? How did he get there? Has he got horse whisperers in his ear going, hey, you should do this play, Jim. I don't know, but this one's probably the best. You know, I don't know. You guys really think Harbaugh is that good of a coach, or is he a mastermind like Bill Belichick?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure if you can call him a mastermind yet, Greg, and thanks for the phone call. But, I mean, he's a very good coach. However, he hasn't won a championship yet, and that could be because he leaves when his stock is hot before he can win a championship. With Stanford, he was the hottest coach in the league. Then he went to the 49ers, and then he wasn't fired for performance. He was fired because management and ownership didn't like him. So then he became the hottest ticket for college, and it looked like he was flopping at Michigan for a while. He actually had to give some money back, which was truly bizarre. And now he's hot again. So now he might. I love telling sports stories to Rich because he doesn't, he's not a big sports guy. So he's
I like it when people have to give money back.
And he stayed. That's the
wow.
thing. Just about anybody else would have said, see ya. But, I mean, he was kind of at a low point in his career. And he gave the money back and he stayed at Michigan. And I think that he dangled that Minnesota job in front of Michigan the other last year to kind of punish them or show them what they're missing when they made him give some money back. But, he's obviously a good coach. I wouldn't put him up there with Belichick yet. He's got to win a couple of championships at either the college or pro level. But he's hot again because, yeah, I mean, last year you could have said it was a fluke, beat Ohio State, went to the college football championship, but then a playoff, but he did it again this year. So it's a little legitimacy there, Dave.
You know, I think Harbaugh is a very good coach. I mean, you go to back-to-back CFPs coming off of the bad COVID year that Michigan had, where, yes, he took the pay cut. And he everywhere he's been, San Diego State, you know, Stanford, San Francisco 40, he went to the Super Bowl.
Right.
You know, so.
He's been to the mountain. He just never gotten over it.
You know, he's a proven commodity. I like Harbaugh. I think that he does a good job. I think Michigan just what happens sometimes in games is momentum, you know, starts to get going and sometimes it's just hard to overcome, and that's what happened at the beginning of that game.
All right, so, Rich, you admittedly don't watch any sports.
Correct.
So I thought there'd be a fun game we can play with you here in the final minute. There's way too many bowl games, and some of these names are ridiculous, so I'm going to read you a couple. You tell me if they're real or fake, okay?
Oh, like as in, okay, I get it.
Yeah. The Duke Mayonnaise Bowl.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, and actually at the end of the game, the coach gets, like, douse with mayonnaise.
Gross.
And like there is little cutaways with players and coaches talking about what they thought about mayonnaise, and it looked like it was a hostage video because nobody said they liked mayonnaise. The Service Merchandise Diamond Bowl. Real or fake?
Absolutely.
I wish, but I made that up.
No, Service Merchandise doesn't exist anymore. That should have been my clue.
Yeah.
Rats. That's a good one though.
The Kraft Fight Hunger Bowl.
Yes, that's real.
Yep, it was 1 year. It was held on after the 2010 season on 2011. And now it's the San Francisco Bowl. We'll be back. And Kevin and Tom will be back tomorrow. But in the meantime, we're having a great time warming up this spot at the beginning of the new year. 800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR if you want to chime in anytime via call or text. And Laura's standing by with some people who've done just that.
Dave in Lyon Township says, we had Trumpite candidates. That explains everything. The lack of money, lack of support, lack of integrity, lack of reach, and lack of qualifications.
Yeah, and I think that proved to be the case with, you know, the Republicans' less than inspiring showing on the midterm election night 2022, everywhere except for Florida. I mean, you know, we've been talking about Tudor Dixon's issues. You had Matt DiPerno, who was accused of stealing a voting machine. Then you had Christina Caramo, who tried to negate a bunch of mail-in ballots in Detroit. It looked like the Michigan GOP nominated candidates that were a little too far right, a little too far out there, and they're probably going to have to come a little bit more to the center if they want to regain some of those losses from when 2024 rolls around.
I have a question for you, Mike.
Yes, Dave.
If Tudor Dixon was not the candidate, and it was the people that probably were going to be the candidates, but before the whole scandal with the
signatures. Like James Craig looked like he was the front runner.
Right.
Yes.
Do you think that either of those candidates would have had a better chance against Governor Whitmer than Tudor Dixon had? Would they have gotten more?
Backing
from the GOP? Would they have gotten more money? Would they have been running more ads? Would they have done more interviews?
Yeah, I mean, James Craig, when he got into the race, there, you know, he was the presumptive front runner, and he was one of the candidates who got swept up in that company who used fake signatures or whatever happened. It turns out when the rubber met the road, he didn't have enough valid signatures to appear on the ballot. But, you know, when I first heard that James Craig was running, I was hoping that it was going to be Chief James Craig running, and kind of throughout the subsequent weeks, he went from being Chief James Craig, who was kind of like his own man, to Republican candidate James Craig. And it didn't really come across as genuine. It seemed like a lot of times he was just up there reciting a book report. There was that embarrassing incident when he tried to announce that he was running, and he got shouted down by protesters and had to go elsewhere. So I think when James Craig first got into the race that he was a front runner, but I who knows how the next months would have played out. But, yeah, he might have. It's very possible.
I think he would have done better.
Yeah, and I have to – let me pull up the numbers. Let's see. Tudor Dixon, 2022.
How much more of a Detroit poll vote do you think he would have pulled versus Tudor?
Ooh,
I don't know.
A good question.
Because what I was hearing is that James Craig was popular everywhere but Detroit.
But he had name recognition in Detroit.
That's true.
Yeah, that goes a long way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I feel like it would have been a lot closer than it actually turned out to be.
I think
and
you're
I
right.
know that.
I agree with you.
And I know that Tudor Dixon did gain some ground as we got closer to election day. But I think that if it was Chief Craig, I think it would have been a lot closer.
And the topics in which they were, you know, debating would have been different, I
yeah,
think, too.
Right. Mm. I would agree with you on that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was, from what I remember, it wasn't super close here. Here we go. Oh, actually, yeah, Whitmer won 54 to 43. So, yeah, I mean, I think that I think she probably kept it the closest, Tudor Dixon, that is, among all the primary candidates. But, yeah, I think James Craig would have put up a little more of a fight on election night than Tudor Dixon did. Laura, do we have any more texts? I thought we had a few more.
We sure do. Joanne has in Washington Township has a question for Dave and wants to know what Governor Whitmer did for you as a person and what would you think she – I'm sorry, let me try that again. As a person that would make you think that she would have won. She's done nothing good for Joanne and her family and, in fact, has made her life worse with economic politics during COVID, her constant following of Biden's policies that are economically disastrous for us all.
I felt that Governor Whitmer did the best job that she could have done during COVID. I really, truly had no problem with how she handled it. Well, I know that a lot of people didn't like the shutdowns, but we didn't know what was going on. It was so new, and I think that I applaud her for how she handled everything during the pandemic.
Well, and here's the thing, too. I mean, I don't think people vote for candidates anymore. They vote against the person they like the least. And I think that in a vacuum going into 2022, a lot of people weren't happy with Whitmer. You had the people who liked you had the people who liked what she was doing with the shutdown. They were alienated because she pretty much did a 180 degree change once she got a new health director. And then, of course, the people who didn't like the lockdowns didn't like her to begin with. But then what happens is instead of going up against an imaginary candidate, you go up against an actual person. And if that person is more distasteful to you than the person who's in office that you don't like, the people are much more comfortable with the devil they know than the one they don't. I mean, if you look back, George W. Bush, going into 2004, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but his approval rating was very low. Still won re-election.
Yeah,
I think Obama's weren't as bad as George W.'s, but he was still down. He won.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't necessarily think people voted for any of the Democrat candidates because they were super passionate about them. Maybe they did. I can't speak for everyone, but I think what they did is they were voting against Republican candidates that they didn't like.
Part of the problem is that everything today gets political. That doesn't need to get political, and then that becomes bipartisan. So if you're a Democrat, you're going to think of it one way. If you're a Republican, you're going to think of it another way. COVID was an example of that. That did not need to become political. That was a health crisis, and it became political, and then people got angry because Governor Whitmer had the shutdowns, and a lot of businesses had to close, and I understand that, and I get it, and it was horrible, but we did not know what we did not know. So what else was she supposed to do? I had this discussion with Sean Boligian during the pandemic. If you remember, Mike, I think you were working with me that day when I was producing, and we got into a big back and forth about that. If you, what was she supposed to do? We did not know what we didn't know.
Yeah, but and like I said, I mean, the thing that was weird to me about the way she handled it, when Robert Gordon was her health director, It was, and these could just be coincidences. I don't think they are. When Robert Gordon was her health director, it was shutdowns, it was lockdowns, and then he left. Elizabeth Hertel came aboard, and all of a sudden, that it was YOLO. All right, lockdowns are over.
That was odd.
So, coming up at 10:48, Rich has a list of Joe Biden's presidential pardons, and the three of us in here actually disagree on the concept of presidential pardons. So we want you guys to play referee. 800-859-0957. 800-859-0WJR. It's all talk. All right. So Joe Biden released his list of presidential pardons over the weekend. And we want to know what you think of presidential pardons. 800-859-0957. 800-859-0WJR. I know amongst the show here, we actually disagree with each other. So if you play referee via phone or text, 800-859-0957. Rich Meister?
Yes, among those folks was Beverly Ann Ibn-Tamis, an 80-year-old Ohio woman who was convicted of murder for shooting her husband. When she was 33 years old, she testified her husband physically assaulted her and threatened her in the moments before she killed him. But the court did not allow expert testimony regarding battered women syndrome. On appeal, she was sentenced to a term of up to 5 years, a moment considered significant toward judicial recognition of battered woman syndrome. A 66-year-old man from Arizona, Gary Parks Davis, who pleaded guilty to using a telephone to conduct a cocaine transaction when he was 22. He served a 6-month sentence and completed probation in 1981. He has since earned a bachelor's degree and volunteers in his community. The rest were all nonviolent drug-related charges. Now, just like President Biden, I too believe in second chances, and I think if you pay your debts to society, you should have every right to lead a fulfilling and productive life. I disagree with pardons, however, vehemently. I think it goes against everything we broke away from England for. It's too king-like for
me. I agree. I think you're giving one person way too much power. Now, obviously, according to those stories you read, that these people, it sounds like they deserved a pardon. But I also feel like we have legal mechanisms in this country that will help you get there.
You have appeals. Yeah. And when you do go to jail, you do have parole hearings, right, and you can state your case. This nation is built on a strong foundation of checks and balances and a healthy division of authority. I just don't believe in giving the president that much power. I doubt George Washington would have, too, when he was president.
Yeah, and I'm not exactly sure when presidential pardons went into effect. But, I mean, I was looking it up because I'm like, okay, I mean, are there any caveats? And there really aren't. As far as I know,
you can pardon anyone.
You can pardon anybody. And I don't know. I think there should be some kind of process instead of just giving one person the magical wand saying, okay, you're out of jail. You're out of jail.
Now, there is a process that they do go through.
Yeah.
His presidential cabinet and people there help him select people to pardon.
Right.
A lot of it is PR. I mean, when you look into this, I mean, nonviolent drug-related charges and that sort of thing all kind of falls into play with Biden's agenda. So that blends into his presidency pretty well. But the overall arching idea of pardoning, in my eyes, is wrong.
I agree. And Dave, you actually disagree.
Well, I feel like this is a ongoing thing with me just being alone on an island by myself here with the three of us.
The island of Rieger.
Yeah, I have no problem with the president pardoning people, and I have no problem with him having the ultimate. It's part of the job. That comes with the job. You make the decision. You know, that's part of it. If enough people have a problem with it, then change the rules. Mm-hmm. But that's the rule that's in place. He's going to make the decision that he makes. It's kind of like, okay, it is. It's kind of like, you know, taxes and, you know, gas prices.
So you just accept it.
I don't
know if that's supporting it so much as just accepting it, though.
It is what it is.
Dave, on presidential pardons.
If you're going to, on one hand, say that people deserve a second chance.
Yeah.
Okay. Then, okay. that's their second chance.
There's an awful lot of people who deserve a second chance that go through other ways.
Yeah. Now, I have no problem with the president putting his support towards someone that he would like to him or her see get out of jail, using their platform to speak out an injustice that might have befallen somebody. But yeah, I mean, you know, obviously it sounds like president's inner circle can dissuade him or her away from pardoning somebody, but it still sounds like it's ultimately the president's decision. And to me, that's a blatant violation of checks and balances.
The way you described it, waving a wand, I thought was so perfect, because that's what I disagree with the most. He or she should not have that kind of power.
Right.
So you think there should be like a group?
Yeah,
there's the Innocence Project. There's a lot of them that are working to get wrongly convicted people out of jail.
And I have no problem with that. Like I said, I think that's great.
Yeah, but yeah, it should be left up to more than one person, and there should be a process, I think.
So your problem technically is not with the pardon process. It's with the power being left up to one person.
There you go.
To actually,
yep, there you go.
To actually engage the law.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So you actually you don't really necessarily have an issue with pardons. You just would like it to be like maybe a group that figures this out.
Maybe a pardon board.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The Rich Lozinski pardon board.
800-859-0957. Do you agree with Rich and myself? Thumbs down on the pardons. Do you agree with Dave? Thumbs up on the pardons. And like I said, I mean, the people you've listed, Rich, people killing in self-defense, obviously their cases should be reviewed, but I think they should be reviewed within the system that's already in place.
Look at how broken it is. Look at how many people have gotten out of jail because of advances from science. And DNA and stuff like that, wrongfully accused, you know.
Sure.
I think that kind of stuff, and obviously you don't necessarily need a pardon if that kind of stuff comes out.
Yeah, I mean, it expedites it.
But I think that, I just think that it kind of is what it is. That's his job. That comes with being the president. And,
Do you see it king-like at all, though? Do you see it reminiscent of what we tried to break away from?
Well, I mean,
200
years. I guess technically, yeah, it is. But that's the president comes with certain responsibilities. You're going to run for that office. You're going to have to make some tough decisions, and that's just the way it's going to be. I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily that black and white. But,
no, and it never is.
You know, but again, it is what it is. 800-859-0957,
800-859-0WJR. If you'd like to weigh in on this or anything else that we're talking about today. This is a weird story out of New York City. And of course, I can't find it in my stack stuff here. Here we go. New York Governor Kathy Hochul. She signed natural organic reduction into law. And if you don't know what that is, it's human composting.
That's gross.
So you are allowed to use a loved one's ashes now for compost. Two Democrat lawmakers introduced the bill in hopes of eliminating carbon emissions. And essentially the process is the 60-day chemical-free compost mortem process involves putting a person's remains in a vessel with organic material such as straw, alfalfa, or sawdust. It is sealed, and the remains can be used to decomposed remains can be used in compost.
So people could, grow their vegetables in the remains of their loved ones?
That sounds like Soylent Green, doesn't
it? It is. It's Soylent Green. It's made out of people.
Right.
That is disgusting.
Well, in that context, yes. I think it could be a nice tribute if you used it to plant a tree.
Oh, okay.
Or a bush.
Sure.
But yeah,
if you're eating the
if you trick me into eating a salad and you tell me...
That was my uncle.
Yeah, that was my uncle. I'm never coming to your house
what
again.
What happened to the good old days when you just take the ashes to the golf course and spread them over the lake that this person could never clear with a three iron?
The dang social media takeover, Dave.
What happened to those days?
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I don't know if this is going to cut carbon emissions by 2050 like the two New York State lawmakers were hoping. I didn't think that people decomposing led to a lot of carbon, but here we are. It's also legal in Vermont, Washington, Colorado, California, and Oregon. 800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR. Your call's next. It's All Talk on News Talk 760 WJR. And if you are on the line, we will be getting your phone calls at 1-800-859-0957. A couple people want to weigh in on presidential pardons, but first let's bring in WJR senior news analyst Marie Osborne. We lost a couple of towering figures over the weekend, and here she is to recap. Marie.
Oh, yeah, these are a couple of huge losses for the Globe. So we'll start, of course, with Pope Emeritus Benedict. And right now at the Vatican, his casket is on display. It'll stay there for 3 days at St. Peter's Basilica. People are allowed to pay their respects until 7 o'clock at night. This all started this morning there in Rome, and thousands of people are filing by. Pope Benedict was a naturally shy man who said he had no dream to become pope and lead the world's 1.2 billion Catholics. He even was quoted as saying, "I prayed to God, don't do this to me." But evidently this time he did not listen. In 2005, he was 78 when he was chosen by the College of Cardinals to succeed Pope John Paul II, who was beloved by many, as we know. He was widely known and respected as a church intellectual, heading up the Office of Church Doctrine. And although characterized as a deep conservative by most observers, he did the most anti-establishment thing and became the first pope in more than 600 years to resign his post, which was supposed to be for life. He believed his health was not what it should be to face some strong headwinds battering the Vatican, namely the priest pedophile scandal and a Vatican financial crisis. During his retirement, he basically led a monastic life not far from the Vatican. We know that Pope Francis would visit him there. He continued to write books and play the piano, and basically he stayed out of the limelight and liked it that way. Pope Emeritus Benedict's funeral will be on Thursday in St. Peter's Square. It will be presided over by Pope Francis in another history-making moment. The other life that we want to make note of today is Barbara Walters, the famous American journalist. But to call her an American journalist would be an understatement. This is a person who was known around the world. Her death was made by an announcement by her former employer, ABC News. She was 93. She had not been seen in public for several years. Her roster of interviews, legendary. She was the only joint interview of Egyptian President Anwar Sadat and Israeli Prime Minister Menachem Begin amid their peace talks in 1977. In 1999, she scored the first big interview with Monica Lewinsky. In December of 2011, she asked Syria's President Bashar al-Assad about brutal reprisals against protesters. The interview was the first Assad gave to an American journalist. She also spoke with Saddam Hussein, Muammar Gaddafi, and Fidel Castro. Barbara Walters, also a moment in history when she was paired with Harry Reasoner in October of 1976. This was the nation's first female news anchor, the first anchor to take home a seven-figure salary. That pairing, as we all know, did not go well. Reasoner really had a hard time concealing the fact that he disliked Walters and having to be on the air with her. So how did she do it? Ted Koppel saying she would just simply outwork anybody on a story. being the first woman to do almost everything in broadcast news, Walters had to be tough. An old friend, Andrea Mitchell, talked about in the early days in Walters' career, she was told she could only ask newsmakers a question after the first three questions were asked by men. And Walters started working on the Today Show, which, of course, she was so well known for, as a news writer. But her writing, it was for the women only. She could not write copy for men.
Yeah, and Marie, you know, watching the retrospective, that three-question rule just blew me away. I mean, as a child of the 80s, by the time I started watching news, you know, we had our here in Detroit, we had our Carmen Harlins, our Amir Makeupsons, our Diana Lewis's. And so I think it's easy to lose track of the just how much of a trailblazer she was. I mean, watching her, one of her first pieces where she had to, like, put on the Playboy bunny outfit, I was saying to myself, how dare you do that to Barbara Walters? But that's what she was up against back then as a woman trying to break in to the journalism field.
Well, a lot of us, Mike, lived the life. I was in that position many times myself, so I know what that was like. What was interesting about the time that she wore the Playboy bunny suit
and
was the fact that she came back and her coworker said, "Oh, you look nice."
Yeah, and we've got some connection issues with Marie, but I remember in the piece too, she said, "I'm not a Playboy bunny. I'm a reporter." And you know, by the time I found out about Barbara Walters, she had this Angela Lansbury-esque gentility, but she was a bulldog. She asked Muammar Gaddafi, "Are you unstable?" to his face. So, absolute a legend and a trailblazer for sure.
Remarkable.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, Marie, thank you, and I'm sure we'll be talking to you during Guy's show.
Thank you.
We were speaking last hour about presidential pardons. Rich had a list of people President Joe Biden pardoned last year. And we're a bit at odds. Rich and I are not big fans of pardons. Dave is. So we are asking you to referee here, 800-859-0957, starting with Richard in Mount Clemens. Richard, good morning.
Hey, good morning. I just thought I would weigh in and just point out that our Constitution and amendments and the everything else, the Bill of Rights, talks about how a person finally ends up in jail. It goes through a process of many steps and many people. And if the president has the right to undo it at the top, then why can't he have the right to just start at the top and put somebody in jail? Like, I can't see any difference. If he's got one authority, why not complete?
Ooh, that's a good
a
point.
Wide thought. But yep. There's a process, and he ought to be required to follow the process, meaning drop it down a step possibly and force the judge to review, just let somebody go because he feels like it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a good point. The slippery – thanks, Richard. The slippery slope on the other side of the argument. Dave from Rochester, we got a minute for you. Dave, go ahead.
Yeah, just like the Lions would put on there to unrattle the bad rules in NFL football, so was Donald Trump as president. Electoral Count Act, who'd ever thought that would be a problem? Pardon what we're talking about here today. Manafort and Roger Stone. Well, of course you couldn't get a conviction on collusion. Those were the guys doing coordinating the collusion, and they were dangled pardons. So,
right. And you know, Dave, I mean, you know, these pardons, if you're going to do these pardons, they should be people that most people can read and agree about them not being in jail anymore, not pardoning your friends because you made a deal with them.
Yeah.
800-859-0957. You're listening to All Talk on WJR. Kevin and Tom will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, Mike Parsons, Rich Luzinski, Dave Rieger from the Whatever Dave podcast on thegreatvoice.com. Have a smorgasbord of fun and frivolity out there for you. 800-859-0957. And Laura is standing by with a couple of texts. Text me, beat me if you want to reach me.
Ooh. All right. Craig in Southfield said the word that Harbaugh is only interested in the Colts head is that Harbaugh is only interested in the Colts head coaching vacancy. But he imagines that if the Denver Bronco Walmart brain trust were to offer him a 5-year, $100 million contract, then he would be persuaded to consider the Mile High City.
Wow. Win Super Bowls, live better. That'll be the new motto. Dave, is the Colts job any more desirable than the Broncos job?
Well, it makes sense. Obviously, you remember Harbaugh at the end of his playing career was the Colts quarterback.
Right. So that playoff run made was the first time I heard that tired cliche, Cinderella.
Cinderella story. I remember the AFC Championship game against, I think it was the Pittsburgh Steelers, when it came down to a last second Hail Mary and Harbaugh was the quarterback of the Colts. So I could see that. He does have ties to the Indianapolis Colts. But the texter brings up a good point. The Broncos' new ownership's got a lot of money. So you're going to throw a lot of money at somebody, it could change their mind.
I, too, believe that I have a good point. Why would you want to be a colt, a baby horse, when you can be a bustin' Bronco?
Well, that's because you're younger. You got more time left.
Wouldn't
you like to go back in time to when
you were
a colt and do some things differently?
You got me, Michael.
You're not going to get sports analysis like there anywhere else. Laura?
And changing topics here, Sean in Brighton said the governor of Michigan has similar pardon powers with state convictions that the president of the United States has.
Yeah, that's true. I feel the same way about governor pardons as I do of presidential pardons.
Yeah, me too.
All right, good talk. Okay, so Rich, you've got a couple of things going into effect since it's the first business day of the year that might affect our checkbooks.
Yes.
Our checkbooks. What is this, 1980?
A fabulous summation by somebody from M Live here. Taylor De Amorio did this wonderful little breakdown. Michigan residents are now paying slightly more at the pump due to a rise in the state gas tax. It went from 27.2 cents to 28.6. That's a 5% increase from 2022. This is all part of legislation put into place by former Governor Rick Snyder. Now, unless this law is changed, you can expect to pay 5% more each year, or whatever the inflation rate is currently at. The state goes with whichever is smaller. Since inflation is right around 8%, they went with the 5% this year, thank goodness. So let's say your tank...
Wow, what a break.
Yeah. Let's say you got 15 gallons of your car. You're going to end up paying about an extra 21 cents each time you fill up. If you fill up once a week, it's going to cost you about $11 more for the entire year of 2023 than it did in 2022.
I can swing it, but that's not the point. Why do legislators, whether it's at the governor level or at the state house and senate level, why do they write bills for when they're going to be out of office?
Well, they're probably trying to maintain a legacy of some sort,
right?
I think sometimes.
Yeah. Put it in office when people can see what the effects are.
Yeah, do it while you're there.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like $11 a year is going to make or break anybody,
right?
But there's been a couple times where things were signed into law that weren't going to take effect until years down the road when these people were out of office. And I don't want to say cowardly. That's too strong of a word. It's a little too politically expedient for
sure.
me.
Yes. I agree with that. The money's intended to help fix Michigan's roads, which isn't a bad thing. But it is fascinating to note, however, that from 1997 all the way to 2017, Michigan's gas tax stayed the same. And I can't help but wonder, had we paid a little more over the past two decades, would our roads be better? Would they be in better shape now? And remember, the feds charge you a gas tax as well. It's about 18 cents a gallon. Then you got another penny for some environmental regulations.
Nickel and diming us.
Yeah, this is all in addition to the 6% sales tax. And amongst the nation, we are the sixth highest in the country. Legislature considered suspending the state gas tax in 2022, but they could not, surprise, surprise, come to an agreement.
Wow, color me shocked. Yeah, and of course, you know, this is leading to a lot of questions. Okay, once electronic vehicles are the thing, and I don't think it's happening as quickly as people think, but eventually, you know, the gas, the internal combustion engine will go the way of the horse and buggy.
Yeah.
And
In theory, sure.
Yeah. And I think it was Tim Skubick did a year-end interview with Governor Whitmer, who said that she'd be for a user tax when it comes to electronic vehicles. What that's going to look like, we don't know yet, but it's something they're going to have to address to replace the revenue they'll lose eventually with the gas engine.
Mm-hmm.
And then the minimum wage is going up today, right, Rich?
It's gone up from $9.87 to $10.10. The rate for minors will increase to $8.59 an hour.
But then it's all going to go towards the new gas tax.
Right. And tipped employee rates will go up to $3.84 an hour. I know Laura used to work as a server at a restaurant, and I'm sure that that extra few cents an hour will help out, even though you got people who are hopefully generous with tips and whatnot. That's got to be a tough gig. I would never want to have to rely solely on the kindness of strangers that way.
Remember when they were going to move minimum wage up to $15?
Yeah.
Remember that? What happened with that?
Well, there's been a bit of controversy even with this smaller amount here.
Business owners saying that they can't afford to stay open.
Well, there's a lot of that.
And pay everybody if they're going to have to pay them a minimum of $15 an hour.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. In 2018, a petition initiative organized by One Fair Wage sought to allow voters to decide on raising Michigan's minimum wage to $12 an hour by 2022 and raise the minimum wage for tipped workers to 80% of the standard minimum wage in 2022. 90% in 2023, and ultimately match it in 2024. So it was going to be a gradual progression upward. The legislature adopted the legislation and then amended it in 2018, putting in lower wage thresholds.
You know, there was also a petition going around to raise the minimum wage, and then the state legislature passed a smaller minimum wage to negate that petition, which I thought was a very very dirty political trick.
I agree with you. And there's been about five different things going back and forth with the legislature that is really kind of nuts here. The Court of Claims ruling has been appealed, pending final resolution of the appeal and lifting of the stay. Under the potential implementation of the originally adopted petition, the minimum wage rate for 2023 would be $13.03 and $11.73 for tipped employees.
Yeah, it's nowhere near what minimum wage was supposed to be. I think it was put in place to be a livable wage.
Yeah,
and you know we're hearing all this stuff. Well, minimum wage isn't supposed to be for making a living. Minimum wage is for kids' first jobs and yada yada. No, it might have changed into that over time, but its original intent was to make sure if you're working 40 hours a week, you can make a living.
Yes, absolutely.
There's also a battle going on that I don't know if it's still in court, but there's a court battle that could also put the tipped minimum wage up to closer to $12 an hour. I don't have the exact numbers here, but tipped employees may be getting an even higher pay bump. And of course, there's been a lot of consternation with that because people think that wages are prices are going to go up, which they are, and it might cut into wait staff's tips. Laura, if you were still waiting, would you rather make closer to what the minimum wage is with less tips, or would you rather keep it the way it is and as Rich said, rely on the kindness of strangers?
I wouldn't wait tables if I didn't get tips. It's not worth it.
Mm.
Not at all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's how I was back when I was in the pizza game. You know, it wouldn't be worth it. And so we'll see what happens.
And it's kind of, in a way, mutually beneficial to the employer and the employee because restaurant profits tend to be razor thin, supposedly. And so if you're relying on the tips, that takes the heat off a little bit from the restaurant owner.
Mike Parsons, Dave Rieger, Rich Luzinski, in for Kevin and Tom. They'll be back tomorrow. 800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR, if you'd like to weigh in on anything we've talked about today. 800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR. Keep that number handy because we want to ask you, what was the most shocking news story of 2022 to you? But first, let's go out to Mary Beth in White Lake. Mary Beth, good morning.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Great. How about you?
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. And I just wanted to comment. You know, when y'all raised the minimum wage, maybe these restaurants and these, you know, waitresses, and they're trying to make money. But it's all about the payroll tax. You got to pay at the end of the week.
Mary Beth, how long? I'm sorry, go ahead.
I have been in business in Commerce Township for 45 years.
Wow.
That was actually my next question, Mary Beth. So you've seen a few minimum wage increases. How do you adjust for that as a business owner over the years?
I have never paid any of my employees minimum wage. Even if they were 15 years old or 16 years old and they came out of Huron Valley Schools through the work program, I always paid them more, $12 an hour.
God bless you.
So pay people what they're worth to begin with, and the minimum wage tax, the minimum wage hike probably won't affect you.
You're already paying more than the minimum right now.
Eventually you probably will start paying more, because if you're paying 12 an hour, minimum wage is 7 and it goes up to 10, you probably will have to raise them. But it sounds like you feel like that helps insulate you a little bit more.
Well, I'm not paying anybody $12 an hour. My employees make $30 an hour. They've been with me for 45 years. Wow. I pay my employees very well, and that's why they stay. And I own a lawn and garden. I'm kind of like a Weingartz.
Are you hiring Mary Beth?
$30 an hour
sounds nice.
Yeah, Mary Beth, what can...
free in the afternoons.
Yeah, well, I can pull weeds, $30 an hour, you know.
Who wants to do bookkeeping?
Oh.
Okay.
That's above my pay grade, but I'll mow a lawn.
Yeah, I could. Rich and I could learn how to drive a tractor.
All right. I like her.
Yeah, Mary Beth, hey, Happy New Year.
Thanks,
best
Mary
of luck
Beth.
With you and your business. Doesn't sound like you need it. Sounds like you're very successful. And thanks for calling in.
She's my lady.
Valuable insight. And that's the audience that this show has.
Mm-hmm.
We don't even need to book an expert. We just throw out the number and they call us.
Let's have Mary Beth on more often. She could be on the podcast.
She could be our fourth co-host.
Oh, my goodness.
Speaking of which, 800-859-0957. One of the reasons I'm so glad it's the new year, it's because for the past week, there's been nothing on TV or on the internet other than, like, best of 2020 lists.
Mm-hmm. I was going to do a best of traffic if you guys didn't show up.
Oh, like that one disabled vehicle on northbound 75 at 60 miles?
That was a good one.
I didn't know how we'd get out of that, but...
That was a good one.
But by God, we
stick around and you'll find out.
But I do want to ask, what event or news story that took place in 2022 shocked you? 800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR. That if I came to you back from the future on the first day of 2022 and said, this is going to happen, you would have said, no way. Go ahead and start us off, Dave, with yours.
I got to say, you got to go with Elon Musk taking over Twitter.
Yeah.
I mean, there was no way that I thought that. I'm surprised, you know.
Well, even as it was happening, Dave, I remember thinking, there's no way this is actually going to go through.
Yeah.
Because it seemed like he was in, then he was out. It seemed like it was just kind of like this erratic, bored billionaire just trying to freak people out. But lo and behold, he went through with it. And it's been interesting, to say the least. Anything in the Twitter files shock you? I feel like it kind of confirmed what everyone was accusing Twitter of.
Yeah. I think we all kind of, it was the you are who you think we are type thing.
Mm.
I think it's the fact that the Twitter files came out is the shocking part. Mm. Not what was in them. It's just the fact that
right.
We were, you know, someone actually did it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, I feel like obviously Twitter is going in a little bit more of a right wing direction, obviously. And I think Elon Musk knows his audience and he was giving them what they wanted. What about you, Rich?
I would definitely have to say the Roe v. Wade thing. I did not see that coming.
Absolutely. That was mine, too.
And I would, if you would have asked me a year ago, I would have said, no way, not happening.
Right. Because what everyone thought was going to happen was the Supreme Court was going to kind of chip away around mm-hmm. the edges before they got rid of it. And I think it's technically a 6-3 conservative majority on the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. And the first chance they got, they overturned it. And I remember that it was John Roberts who tried to make it just about, I think it was the Missouri or Mississippi abortion ban. He wanted to narrow it to just the state that was in front of them.
Oh, that I didn't know.
Samuel Alito said that this decision is just for Roe versus Wade, not for anything else. Then Clarence Thomas came out and said, "Hey, while we're looking at this, let's look at gay marriage, let's look at contraceptives, let's look at."
Yeah, I thought he went off the handle there.
Yeah, and honestly, I think that's probably what did the Republicans in.
Oh yeah. That was the death of the red wave.
Right, because they're like, oh, wow. I mean, this guy, he's one guy in the court, but he is a guy in the court, and people are thinking, yeah, he's coming for these other rights, too. And I think that people...
galvanized the left to really kick up and throw their votes.
Yeah, because
their
Rich...
candidates.
Because at first I was going to say the lack of the red wave shocked me, and then I went back, what was the cause?
Right.
Roe versus Wade was the impetus, and I agree. I did not think that they would overturn it right away. I thought that they were going to kind of strip away rights until it was completely gone.
You know, you think of if Roe v. Wade, if that thing didn't happen, you had terrible inflation.
Yep.
You had terrible gas prices.
Yep.
You had a
very low approval rating.
Yeah, a very clumsy withdrawal from Afghanistan.
Right.
You know, these were big things.
Right, which may have emboldened Russia to go into Ukraine.
Oh, yeah.
We don't know, but I think that's a plausible theory.
Yeah, yeah.
You're right, Rich. All the economic markers
would have said, hey.
Yeah,
Democrats are going to get their clocks cleaned.
And plus, I think historically, and I'd have to go Google this. Historically, normally, in the midterms, the opposing party of who's in the White House normally does better.
Mm.
So, yeah, you're right. All these things,
all signs pointed to.
Yep. And then the Roe versus Wade thing just completely turned everything on its head.
Yeah.
So. 800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR. We're going to take your calls on this. Also, we have the list of banned words coming up next, and it's pretty interesting list so far. So make sure you hang around with us. You can call us or text us. Kevin and Tom, we'll be back tomorrow. It's All Talk on WJR. Homestretch, thanks for sticking with us. It's... Mike, Dave, and Rich from the Whatever Dave podcast on thegreatvoice.com and taking your calls and texts on a number of different topics. Most recently, asking you that what happened during 2022 that if somebody would have said to you on New Year's Day this was going to happen, you'd be shocked or wouldn't believe it. Dave's was Elon Musk taking over Twitter. Rich and I were the overturning of Roe versus Wade, and I think we got a text on it there, Laura.
Indirectly, Brian and Myland was, kind of going along the lines of what Rich was saying, that the only reason Whitmer won was because of abortion rights.
And you know what? I mean, there's no way we could ever know that for sure, but I feel the same way. I feel like Rich indicated last segment, all the indicators were there for a bloodbath. So to speak, a red wave that everyone was talking about. And yes, the Roe versus Wade just completely changed all that. Dave?
I would 100% agree with that text message. I mean, I that's why I felt the way that I felt about how the election was going to go. I felt like Tudor Dixon, with her stance on abortion, put herself in a bad place to start.
Well, that's the interesting thing about winning a primary and winning a general election. To win a primary, you have to be elected by your party. And so, during the primary, I mean, the Trump endorsement was not only much sought after, but it was very effective. And then once you get to the general election, it seemed like his word was mud. And in one day's time, he went from being a kingmaker to persona non grata within his own party. Everyone jumped ship from Trump to Ron DeSantis pretty quick.
So much, in fact, he was even talking trash about, said he had some stuff that he could release.
Yeah, and he started calling him Ron Sanctimonious, and Ron DeSantis didn't take the bait because, you know, if you don't like Donald Trump, you're not going to like Ron DeSantis because he and Donald Trump are very similar. But he also is much more polished than Donald Trump. He knows how to play the political game better than Donald Trump. He's a much better politician than Donald Trump was, and he didn't react to any of it.
Yeah,
so
he played it pretty cool.
Yeah,
I gotta hand it to him.
Speaking of former President Trump, one of the other stories that I found interesting, I don't know, surprised would be the word, was the Mar-a-Lago and all the documents that they went and seized.
Yeah, I remember.
That story. I don't know who's thinking like, okay, we're gonna go and investigate one of the ex-presidents for taking classified documents, whether they were declassified or not,
right,
out of the White House.
And we haven't gotten an answer on that.
Ongoing, obviously.
Yeah.
Because with all of these investigations, which are very hard to keep straight, I mean, we saw with the tax returns. How long was that court battle to release his tax returns going on before they were finally released?
I thought we were never going to see those.
No, I didn't either. also, the Trump Organization, their guilty verdicts from earlier this year, that was like a 10 to 12 year process there. So whatever we find out about Mar-a-Lago is going to be long after Donald Trump's political career is over. I'm convinced. Now, I could be wrong. That could be the story that shocks me in 2023. We'll
yeah.
see.
Might be having the same conversation a year from now.
Yeah, just play the tape. We'll edit in the news stories. I was most shocked about Mar-a-Lago. So every year, Lake Superior State puts out their list of banned words, which I think is quite audacious. You can't ban words.
Good word, Michael.
Yeah, and don't try to ban that word on me, Lake Superior
State. It's capricious and arbitrary is what it is.
It's adolescent, if you ask me, which isn't a real word. I just made that up now.
I think I have an aunt adolescent.
Oh, well,
it's a distant relative.
Wish her a happy new year for me.
We don't see her often.
Yeah. And obviously, this list is put out in good fun. It's the list of words that have been overused throughout the previous year that whoever the brain trust at Lake Superior State gets together and says that these were the most overused words. I'm a big fan of language. I like to see how language evolves.
You have a great command of the English language.
Most of the time, yes. I have my moments where I don't. So here are a list of words, select list. I'm not going to go through all of them. That were banned by Lake Superior State. Number one, the acronym GOAT, which, as we all know, stands for greatest of all time.
That's been banned.
Why are they banning that word?
I think because it gets thrown around too much. It's sort of like back when I was a teenager, the word amazing, I thought, was overused. Just because you love something doesn't mean it's amazing. Just because you like something doesn't mean that it's that you're obsessed. According to Lake Superior State, I still like using the word GOAT, but I normally like to use it in a joking manner, you know. But they feel that it's being thrown around too much. It's probably been thrown around a lot this year because of all the Tom Brady news that's been that's been out there. He's considered the greatest of all time.
I don't consider him the greatest of all time.
Here we go.
You know, after a good Lions win, I like to call Jared Goff Jared Goat. So maybe they've been seeing my posts and they think that's a little ridiculous.
All right, well, if you're going to be using it in the wrong way, then yeah, it should be banned.
All right, Dave, so
All right, go ahead. Move on.
No, go ahead, Dave. Who's your goat? Don't say John Elway.
No, Joe Montana.
Different era.
State after.
Different era, yeah.
Okay.
Right, that's true. Once they name Wyoming Brady-oming, I guess I'd have a leg to stand on here.
Yeah.
All right.
Yes, all right,
sorry.
So this word
sorry
was,
for interrupting.
That's well, Dave, it's okay. You're a co-host. You're allowed to. Don't apologize for how you feel, Dave. That's like apologize for getting real. Number three, quiet quitting. I think this word is crap, by
yeah,
the
you've
way.
Never liked it.
No, because...
I've been on board.
What quiet quitting is technically when people stop trying hard at their job and just do their job, which... It, to me, it sounds like it's a word made up by management or like corporate types to shame people for just doing their job.
You think it's a buzzword?
Yeah. As long as you're doing what the job description is, you shouldn't be shamed into not taking on extra responsibility if you don't want to. If you want to, that's fine. That's God bless. But quiet quitting, I thought that was a buzzword just used to shame people who are doing exactly their job and nothing else. Hmm. Number four, gaslighting.
They're banning number four. How are we going to live without a number four?
One, two. What if they
one, two, three,
what if they banned
five.
Seven or six or zero?
Well, those
we'd have to change.
Four,
we'd have to change
love.
Our entire.
People wouldn't be able to call in.
Right. Gaslighting. Gaslighting is when somebody brings something up and you deny that it ever happened when it normally does. I think gaslighting should still be used because I think that it's very important when you're pointing out abusive behavior.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a little too overused in the political realm. A lot of times in politics, gaslighters use the word gaslighting.
Yeah.
So maybe from that perspective, it should be quote unquote banned. But I think when it comes to calling out abusive behavior between people, manipulative behavior between people, I think it's still a perfectly cromulent word.
I was hoping you're going to use
wow,
that.
Wow, amazing's actually on this list. I didn't know.
That's amazing.
Amazing should have been banned years and years
ago.
We
would have got to it quicker if they had banned four.
That's true. Maybe we should be on the board.
Hmm.
Well, just like that, our time is over here on the All Talk with the Tom Jordan and Kevin Dietz.
Been a blissful morning,
I've had
gentlemen.
A great time.
Thank
Let's
you.
Stay on through Bongino.
Okay.
Thanks to Laura and Danielle for Dave Rieger and Mike Parsons. No, I'm Mike Parsons. It's hard to focus. We'll see you later. Bye.
See you.